This is Neijing Now, prioritizing well-being.
Neijing is the vitality that shields us from disease.
Neijing Now, placing and taking responsibility for the health of the individual and the planet. From molecular biology to global ecology, from political, social, economics to psychology and spirituality. Neijing Now, demystifying medicine, empowering host resistance. We can be found on the web at neijingnow.org, neijingnow.org. I'm Dr. Jayashree Chander, and I welcome you to another edition of Exploring Neijing Now. In this episode, we return to the top of the digestive tract. Professor Don Curtis tells us about the importance of preventive oral health.
Happiness is good, and it is impacted by oral health.
Professor Susan Hyde tells us about dental public health with special attention to the elderly.
The oral cavity can really be the canary in the gold mine.
And our good friend Marc Antoine shares his personal perspective on dental care under the French National Health Service.
I mean, you can choose a dentist with sensible prices.
Dr. Don Curtis is a professor at the University of California, San Francisco in the Department of Preventive and Restorative Dental Sciences. His research interests range from common dental issues like cavities and erosions to the education and training of dentists. Dr. Curtis, welcome to Neijing Now.
Thank you.
Dr. Curtis, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today about the importance of oral health. We have discussed the importance of oral health with a professor from the Sapienza University in Italy, and he had told us about how the National Health Service in Italy provides comprehensive dental care for all its citizens, in stark contrast to our system of dental care here in America. And I wondered if you could comment.
Yeah, access to dental care is becoming a more significant issue with the cutbacks in Medicare, Medicaid for underserved communities. As a result of not having access to care, there have been many more of those individuals that have let dental issues exacerbate to the point of acute infections becoming medical issues and seeking care in emergency rooms.
Yeah, so you're speaking about the state-run programs, Medi-Cal and Medicare. What dental care do they cover?
Basically nothing.
Okay. Actually, in my experience, even private health insurance does not cover any dental care.
That's correct.
So does this make sense to you, that there's a portion of the body that health insurance refuses to cover?
It doesn't make sense. There's lots of evidence that oral health is important to quality of life issues. It's important for underlying levels of systemic inflammation and C-reactive protein levels and how that impacts other chronic disease processes. So yeah, oral health is very, very important. There's more studies to support the importance of oral health, but there's still a lack of funding and general recognition in public policy for this.
So can you say more about the impact of oral health on the general state of inflammation in the rest of the body?
First, just on oral health in psychosocial dimensions. You know, people that have missing teeth are much less social. They're less likely to interact with other people and become isolated. That's number one. As far as the relationship between oral health and systemic health, more recent studies that have shown fairly strong associations and some evidence for cause and effect between poor oral health and diabetes and poor oral health and cardiovascular events.
So what you're saying is that people who have missing teeth or have poor oral hygiene often get isolated and perhaps even get depressed from loneliness and lack of going to parties or going to social functions, eating out with friends. There's that whole dimension which impacts the quality of life. And then the second thing that you're saying is there have been studies that have shown an association between poor oral health and the development of diabetes or the exacerbation of diabetes or cardiovascular disease. How does that work?
Well, cardiovascular events, there's a number of underlying causes, one of which is generalized systemic levels of inflammation. And one source of inflammation is from oral infections from the dentition.
So generalized systemic inflammation means inflammation throughout your whole entire body.
Right. Bacteria being introduced into the bloodstream, and a common mechanism for that is from infections in and around dentition, around the teeth.
So basically brushing your teeth could prevent strokes.
Improved oral health and less inflammation being distributed into the bloodstream will decrease the risk for cardiovascular events.
You know, that seems like a pretty simple and easy thing to do, to take care of your teeth. And the implications and the benefits are so great if you're preventing strokes and diabetes and heart disease by brushing your teeth regularly and flossing regularly. It seems so easy. Why is it so hard?
I mean, these shouldn't be medical questions, because there's no doubt medically that oral health is important. The evidence is there in the literature. So you're asking a policy question, and I don't know the answer to that. I'd like the people involved in policy decisions to answer that and answer why, amongst the 20 more industrialized countries, the oral health benefits are lacking so much in this country for so many people.
Even people who have dental insurance, there's such a low cap on the amount that they're willing to pay that if you have any procedure that is required that is above and beyond just normal preventive care, you still end up paying the bill, even though you're carrying dental insurance.
That's a good question. I think there's problems within the dental profession that probably should be addressed. There should be more mid-level care from more people to increase access for more people having care. I mean, there's all sorts of problems in the healthcare system in general. The percentage of our gross domestic product that we spend on healthcare is enriching a number of people, and there's a lot of interest to keep that status quo, and changes to provide more mid-level care in the dental field is something that should happen. I think there's going to be a lot of resistance.
What do you mean by mid-level care? Can you explain that?
More, for example, dental hygienists. That by itself could drive the costs down for cleaning by having more people trained in providing that care. There could be additional mid-level training for people to place simple restorative fillings. More incentives for more people to work with the people needing better access to dental care.
You were talking about public policy. Do you have any thoughts on what would be required to bring dental care into healthcare?
A lot of polarized opinions on healthcare policy, entrenched views and entrenched stakes in medicine and in dentistry. I really like some of the examples of Kaiser Northern California and Kaiser Oregon. It actually provides dental care as well, in that model, in many measures, has been exemplary in providing favorable access for favorable costs. So I think models are out there. None of them are perfect, and all of them have deficiencies, but the system we have now is certainly needing to be modified. I think the system they have in England is a dual system where people have a baseline level of care for dental needs, and if they want additional care above that, they can seek private care that is independent of the state-sponsored oral health benefits. But I think having a safety net for basic care should be a right in all disciplines of health, and that includes oral health.
I agree with you. I mean, I serve homeless patients in the urgent care, and we get a lot of people who come in who have severe dental problems, and pretty much their only option is to get their teeth pulled. And that sometimes is not particularly the best option for not only their teeth, but also their life and their quality of life.
Yeah, I mean, the average edentulous person without teeth chews with about 15% of the chewing efficiency of a person with teeth.
That's with the dentures or without the dentures?
With the dentures.
So if you don't have teeth, but you're wearing dentures, you're chewing at 15% of what a person with teeth chews at. That's a significant difference.
That's a huge deficit, and that, again, impacts all the psychosocial dynamics of whether they're going to go out to Aunt Betty's for Thanksgiving or stay at home and be isolated. It impacts the foods they can eat with the efficiency, and they're much more likely to use softer foods, higher carbohydrate. There's a higher incidence of diabetes in individuals that wear complete dentures.
No popcorn at the movies.
That's right.
Well, we've all been told since we were very young to chew our food and to chew thoroughly, and most of us don't. Most of us are in a hurry, we eat fast, and we still do kind of a fair job of chewing our food. But if you are wearing dentures and you haven't cultivated a habit of chewing your food, and now you're less capable of chewing your food, I can imagine that you're actually swallowing food that is not masticated or is not ground up as properly as it should be, and that would impact your absorption of the nutrition from your food and your capacity to digest and eliminate the waste.
And the variety of foods you can chew. Lettuce and vegetables are oftentimes difficult. You're getting less roughage and more refined carbohydrates, which is exactly what most individuals don't need.
Right. And those are the kinds of things that would predispose you to obesity. And then once you're obese, you're also going to be less social and less active. And it's just a vicious cycle.
Yeah, it is. There's evidence that this is an issue in the literature, but in policy, it's never heard it really discussed.
So who would be responsible for bringing this to the public policy table?
I'd like to see the dental profession doing more advocacy. The dental profession has not done as much as I think they probably should.
Is it possible that if dental care was included in health insurance, that actually that might be bad for the business of dentistry?
Yeah, I think there's a vested interest in a lot of the dentists in the dental profession benefit financially from the system the way it is. And that's an unfortunate reason, but I think that may be one of the reasons there's the resistance to change.
Could also some of the resistance be that often teeth are considered, even though they're extremely functional and extremely necessary for our overall health, overall well-being, they're also cosmetic?
I think the interest in cosmetic dentistry has marginalized the functional needs of dental care and maybe overemphasized both by the dental profession and by the public. But it still gets back to the dentition and oral health being extremely important for overall health and overall psychological well-being. And that just can't be denied.
Absolutely. Do you have anything to say about the differential in dental care between urban populations and rural populations?
I don't know the specific data. I know access to care is a problem in both urban and rural areas. It's more of a problem in rural areas.
And do you know why?
Dentists generally like to be in more urban areas. In some ways, it's self-selecting. A lot of the lower income individuals are in rural areas, and access with lack of money is limited.
And lack of insurance.
Right.
Could you compare the importance of dental care in the very young and in the very old?
The patterns are set up early, and there's some good models that were established in Australia where they invested very little money and created patterns in school-age children, even preschool children, for brushing habits that translated to much fewer dental needs over a 25-year follow-up.
Wow. Can you describe that model?
Basically, there was an intervention in ages 5 through 8 where a part of the teaching curriculum was showing students oral hygiene habits of brushing and flossing and the importance of it. It was reinforced. It was part of the daily program. And then those individuals were followed up on at 5-year intervals for over a 25-year period. And that translated to incredible overall savings for decreasing oral health needs.
That's impressive. And it sounds like they only measured the oral health needs, but as we discussed earlier, that may have also impacted their overall general health needs.
Excellent point.
You've written about the association between dental care, oral health, and quality of life.
Well, I've just noticed over the years that in providing care for individuals, that it did impact their levels of happiness and ability and willingness to interact socially when they had more confidence in their dental status and in the prosthesis that had been fabricated for them.
Prosthesis means?
Denture or partial denture, anything removable. And there's a high percentage of the population in the United States that wears a removable appliance to replace missing teeth. And when those appliances are functional and aesthetic, the reaction of patients is usually quite favorable. I started using a simple questionnaire maybe 10 years ago. It's called the Oral Health Impact Factor, and it's a questionnaire you use almost on every patient. It provides a measure of how their oral condition impacts their general well-being. I've consistently been impressed, and it is important, and it is measurable, and the outcomes can be very favorable when people have adequate and appropriate dental care.
Great. And you've also written about how even the removable dentures, if you can hook them onto implants, that they'll function better.
Right. By placing one or two implants to support the lower denture, the variety of foods and the efficiency they can chew with improves dramatically. So a huge benefit in quality of life measures.
That's great. And I love that you have been measuring happiness, because ultimately, that's really what people care about, is whether they're happy or not.
Happiness is good, and it is impacted by oral health. So thanks for doing this.
Thank you for participating in this conversation. I really appreciate it. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
The discussions we had before you started taping about collaboration between different healthcare providers should also be emphasized. Dentistry knowing more about different aspects of medicine and people in medicine understanding the importance of oral health. It can do nothing but benefit the public.
I agree. For the benefit of our listeners, before we started taping, we had been talking about in Italy, all dentists first go to medical school, or at least in the past.
Yeah, up until about 1995. Although it changed, there's still more overlap that has led to more collaborative efforts between different specialists in healthcare.
In general, they probably have an easier time collaborating because it's all under the rubric of the National Health Service.
That's right.
On the converse side of it, I also feel that doctors and medical students, we don't learn a lot about oral health and dentistry in training or medical education. And it's, again, kind of like the health insurance question. It's like there's a whole section of the body that we sort of ignore and we leave it to the dentists.
When there's messages of prevention that cross healthcare specialties, the public will greatly benefit. For example, erosion, where an adolescent drinking 4 or 5 sodas a day, yes, there's an increased potential for diabetes, but in the same individual, there's all sorts of effects on loss of tooth structure. A physician, for example, who's seen such a patient and getting such a history and knowing a little bit about the other oral health issues could readily address that with the individual at the same time they're talking about the diabetes. And conversely, the dentist looking at the erosion on the teeth could be thinking, well, this also has an impact on potential diabetic conditions, and just the cross-sensitization should be emphasized a little bit more, and it is in other countries, and I think is something lacking in our healthcare treatments.
Excellent point. And I think in terms of motivating an individual, oftentimes it's the cosmetic that is a bigger motivator to change a habit. So even smokers, the fact that they may get cancer or heart disease is less of a concern to them than the fact that they have bad breath and have yellow teeth. Same way, erosions on the teeth, anything that involves destroying the teeth might have a bigger motivating effect on someone to change their habits.
That's a good point. Dental erosion is just the chemical dissolution of tooth structure, and it comes oftentimes through different sources. Some are external, diet-related, and others are internal in the way of gastric upset.
So like gastroesophageal reflux.
Yeah, gastroesophageal reflux disease, which 20% of the time is asymptomatic. Basically, the hydrochloric acid in the stomach that is a pH of 1.5, it comes up and it dissolves two structure, which starts dissolving at a pH of 5.2. So that's the main endogenous or internal source. The external is less recognized by the public and by the dental profession and by the medical profession, but is incredibly preventable. Sodas, for example. A Coca-Cola has a pH of about 2.6, and people will drink that for the caffeine, and oftentimes 3 or 4, and they'll swirl it around in their mouth, and there'll be a softening of the tooth structure and a loss of tooth structure in a very characteristic pattern. This is a huge contributing factor to the loss of tooth structure and is very under-recognized in the healthcare professions. And if they were recognized and if there was adequate counseling to individuals, we could decrease healthcare costs hugely. Oral health costs are about 8% of the total. I know those could be cut in half with just a few simple prevention issues going mainstream. Having this start with young children in grade school, it's really insane we don't do more.
Coca-Cola should be illegal before the age of 21.
And you're speaking as a physician, and I agree, because of the impact on prediabetes and, you know, type 2 diabetes. And it's equally problematic for future oral health care costs. It is a problem.
What are other drinks that have a low pH or could cause erosion?
Red wines more than white wines. Red Bull. A lot of sports drinks. Some of them are starting to put calcium in their formulations, which is decreasing their erosive potential. But those sports drinks, a lot of them have citrate ion, can chelate with a calcium ion that's part of enamel and pull that off, soften the enamel, and you lose tooth structure that way as well.
So orange juice, grapefruit juice?
Most of the manufacturers of orange juice are combining a little bit of calcium so that that potential chelation is less problematic. But there's a lot of sports drinks that still do not. And so a person involved in a vigorous activity often has less saliva because they're perspiring. And then they take in something with acid, and in a dry environment, there's less buffering because there's less saliva. And so there's loss of tooth structure when it's a pattern and chronic. Yeah.
Great. I'm so glad that you informed us about that, because now we can be more aware.
Yeah, it's an important preventable issue.
I really appreciate you bringing up those points. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your interest in oral health.
Professor Don Curtis from the Department of Preventive Dentistry at UCSF. Tin tin ta te te tin tin ta de tin nagena tagena tagena tarikitaka de tin nagena tarikita ta ka ta ta tarikita tarikita de tin nagena tagena ta tarikita te tin nake tagena tagena tarikitaka tarikitaka de tin nakena tarikita ta ka ta ta tarikita tarikita de tin nagena tagena ta tarikita. Professor Susan Hyde is Interim Chair for the Division of Oral Epidemiology and Dental Public Health at the University of California, San Francisco. She's passionate about public oral health care, particularly for the elderly. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's really an honor and a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, I am just so pleased that other professions are interested in the connections between general health and oral health.
Dr. Hyde, your background is actually very interesting and very diverse.
Yeah, so it was a bit of a checkered past getting here. Started off in the field of cancer research, and I then went back to school and specialized in dentistry. I was in private practice for a while, but unfortunately developed repetitive strain injury. So I went back to school again.
You were practicing as a dentist, and yes, you developed repetitive strain injury from your occupation.
Yes.
Can you say something about that?
Well, dentistry is actually pretty demanding. You actually have to hold a static pose basically all day long and at the same time do basically microsurgery. The difference between success and failure in dentistry sometimes can be as small as a tenth of a millimeter. So that requires a high degree of fine repetitive motion with your arms upraised all day long. So it becomes challenging.
So after you developed repetitive strain injury, then what happened?
So I went back to school and got a master's of public health and then did a residency in dental public health because to take oral health to the next level and look at it as a population level rather than just an individual, I think is where we're really going to make some differences.
Absolutely. In fact, I'm even surprised to hear that there is a specialty called dental public health, and I'm actually delighted to hear it. So tell us more about the field.
So oral disease, like any disease, is not equally distributed across populations. It often has more to do with your ethnic background, your socioeconomic status, your level of education. These factors can often predict what level of disease that you are going to have, largely due to access to care issues.
Can I assume it breaks down the same way it does for almost every other health problem? If you are less educated, you have more dental problems. If you have less money, you have more dental problems. If you are a minority, you have more dental problems. Do I get it right?
Yes, definitely. And it really manifests across the lifespan. I've done some training in geriatrics as well, and certainly the policies that we put in place that affect children really will influence lifetime patterns of access to care and prevention and manifest even more so as older adults.
What policies do we actually have in place for children?
So there are a lot of state policies. A lot of states offer preventive care to children, and there's school fluoride programs, sealant programs, fluoride varnish programs. So there are a lot of interventions towards children. But with my passion for older adults, I'd just like to point out that the prevalence of untreated tooth decay is as high in older adults as it is in children. And yet it's more likely to remain untreated in older adults. And we have no prevention efforts targeted to older adults the way we do children.
Do you have any thoughts on why?
So a lot of it is, again, a policy-based. Medicare and Medicaid basically provide no preventive and very limited restorative services to older adults.
To any adult?
Right. But particularly with older adults with Medicare. Dental insurance is typically tied to your employment. And so when you're no longer working, you no longer have the dental benefits. And so now your treatment and your preventive services are going to be paid out of discretionary dollars. And how that ends up influencing older adults' decisions whether or not to even seek care or maybe the choices that they're going to explore might be dictated by the financial aspect that they never had to consider when they were younger and working.
Right. The same financial situation also has an impact on their nutrition, the foods that they choose.
Yes. What also really affects for older adults is the number of teeth that they have. So there's three main functions that the oral cavity serves. One, mastication or chewing and swallowing food. Two, speech, social interaction, all of that. And three is protection.
What about kissing?
Yeah, that comes under social, talking social.
Singing.
Singing, there you go. So oral health is really a reflection of general health as well as a contributor to general health. Because if you don't have enough teeth to adequately chew your food, you tend to compensate by maybe overcooking food or staying away from healthy fruits and vegetables and fibers and choosing instead foods that are more highly processed, maybe higher in fats and sugar.
Yeah. And then that nutritional status then impacts how many teeth you have.
Yeah, so it becomes a really reinforcing feedback loop. It's not a small problem with older adults. The average number of remaining teeth that older adults have in this country is 19. Studies have shown that we need 20 teeth to have adequate teeth for chewing and proper mastication.
When you have all your teeth, you have 32?
32, but if we don't count the wisdom teeth, it's 28. A lot of us have the wisdom teeth taken out. So if you assume 28 as a full dentition, people who have fewer than 20 teeth have lost about a quarter of their teeth. And that really, really impacts their food choices. It can also impact their communication. And that can also translate into decreased quality of life. Like what you mentioned, if you're concerned about periodontal disease or gum disease that usually causes bad breath, you know, perhaps you're not going to be as romantically or socially inclined. And all of this impacts your quality of life.
You're not going to go tango dancing.
No, probably not.
So public health-wise, we can tell people to brush their teeth and floss their teeth and eat good food and chew their food, and that's kind of the individual intervention. But how are we going to address this on the public health level?
Well, certainly with healthcare reform coming soon.
Coming soon to a theater near you.
So with implementation of healthcare reform and the establishment of medical homes for everybody, it would be wonderful if dentistry was a part of the medical home. Unfortunately, when healthcare reform was first drafted, oral health was not even a consideration. I would like to see this interprofessional approach to health to increase the training of other professions to do basic screening for oral health and make appropriate referrals, much the way a dentist can do basic screening for, say, blood pressure. In many cases, we are the first people who notify a patient that their blood pressure is elevated.
That's true. I've actually seen a lot of patients who didn't know they had high blood pressure, and they were referred to me by a dentist. So currently, does the health reform package have dental care, oral health included?
No, it doesn't. And so there is great efforts at the dental public health level to try and get oral health part of that home.
And you did mention that dental public health is actually the smallest subspecialty. So how many of there are you advocating to include oral health in health reform? I mean, are there 10 of you? Or?
Well, I think there are about roughly 150,000 dentists in the U.S. Roughly about 1,500 are in dental public health.
1%.
Maybe about 1%. Okay. But we're very collegial and interactive and very collaborative 1%.
You're going to have to also be very loud.
Working on that part.
Okay, so tell me what you're working on.
Okay, this year the campus opened their Center for Innovation in Interprofessional Education. So that basically means that a real shift in education. Throughout the years, medicine was taught in the School of Medicine, dentistry, pharmacy, etc., very silo-based. We teach in our buildings. We don't really talk to each other. Our students don't learn together, despite the fact that we all have to learn physiology. We all have to learn anatomy. We all have to learn patient communication. We all have to learn infection control and so on. We were doing it in our individual silos, our individual ivory towers, and not really having these communal conversations. And studies have shown that a lot of medical errors can be avoided by better communication and better teamwork. We will get better outcomes. We will have better health. We will save money doing it.
And we'll make more friends.
Definitely.
Excellent. That is totally in line with the philosophy of this podcast, Naging Now, which is completely interdisciplinary. And we're going beyond just the medical professions of medicine and dentistry and pharmacy and physical therapy, but also include economics and political science and anthropology and sociology.
Wow.
And psychology and spirituality. And like, we're covering it all.
It is definitely all connected because it's all happening within us.
And around us.
Yeah, definitely.
So what do you love talking about?
Bringing the message that oral health matters. If you look at, say, tooth decay, often caused by sugar, well, so is obesity and so is diabetes. And so if we approach problems from a risk factor approach rather than from a disease approach, I think that we will have a bigger impact and definitely affect a lot of diseases simultaneously that share the same risk factors.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I would even add to your list of diabetes and obesity, I would add depression and other psychological impacts and even allergic immune function disorders. I mean, sugar is really a poison.
Some people refer to it as the white death, but, you know, I got to admit, it's all in moderation.
Absolutely. I mean, a teaspoon of sugar in your tea is not going to kill you.
But on average, Americans eat 22 teaspoons a day.
Which is not moderation.
No, it's about 120 pounds a year. And if you just sort of visualize that sitting on the couch.
Or on your thighs.
On your thighs. It's a pretty big impact.
Definitely. So oral health matters. That was the thing you said. I'd like to get your opinion on why you think as a culture, as a society, as a government, as our health insurance industry, why we don't prioritize oral health enough to include it in conversations around health.
Well, I think each one of those perspectives in terms of policy and reimbursement and the individual, they probably would bring different aspects as to why oral health hasn't been as much a priority as it's now emerging. And a lot of it was, and this is my personal opinion, this is not evidence-based, I think it's because for a lot of people, they just view it as a luxury, you know, something that's done if you have enough money, enough time, enough resources, not realizing the oral cavity can really be the canary in the gold mine. Because a lot of times, the first sort of indicator that your health is failing, especially when you haven't had access to regular care, is your oral health. And that is something that I noticed as a dental student 20 years ago. People who were on DentaCal, at the time we did have adult dental services included in DentaCal, their oral health was the first thing to fail with their decreased economic circumstances that had them on DentaCal. And actually that led to my dissertation research where I looked at oral health interventions in welfare reform and found that by addressing the oral health of people who've been on welfare for extended periods of time actually led to improved outcome in their employment.
That is so great. I'd love to hear a little bit more about that. Even at this moment, the Living Wage Coalition in San Francisco is really advocating for dental and vision care for the people on CalWORKs.
Yeah, so I did work with the San Francisco Department of Public Health as well as the social services, and I was working in the welfare department in San Francisco. This was about 10 years ago at this time, and it was the only program in the whole U.S. that was providing oral health services to people on welfare. And we found that those who completed all of their treatment were twice as likely to get a job than those who just came to see me once but never followed through with any of their treatment.
That is impressive. You mean people whose oral health was taken care of, or they had good oral health after their cavities were filled or their root canals were done or their whatever it was that they needed, they were twice as likely to be able to get a job.
Yes, that's what my study found.
That is really impressive. I don't think that the public connects oral health to your whole life circumstances.
Well, it really is. And for a lot of the people that I was treating in the program, they perhaps were missing some of the front teeth. And especially in America, where we're very visually focused, we don't realize it, but we make snap judgments about one another based on how we visually present, especially our teeth. If you're missing front teeth or you have obvious huge cavities or really bad breath because of gum disease, you're kind of relegated to the back room, if you will, of employment. And you don't get the higher paid jobs that are more high interactive.
Yeah, I could imagine how missing teeth would impact how you might have lunch with a client or with an interview, or even your speaking ability, how articulate you would be in an interview.
Yes. You know, even though we really value quantitative research and publications, sometimes it's the qualitative, it's the stories that you hear as you're conducting a study that really hit home. Sometimes people that came through that had no teeth and no dentures. And I always ask them, so tell me, what kind of things do you eat? How do you deal with this? And I'll never forget, it was the day before Thanksgiving, when we're all about family, we're all about food. A gentleman came in who was in that situation, no teeth, no dentures. And I asked him that question. And he says, well, you know, I get my wife to chew my food for me first.
Wow.
And you can hear the emotion in my voice because, you know, the next day is Thanksgiving. and to just be thankful to have good oral health and that you don't require somebody to pre-chew your food for you. That was so powerful.
Yeah. Wow.
Do you remember any other memorable story?
Well, one person sent a letter, and it was really lovely, about the difference that it made in his life. He'd just been living with this level of pain because oral infections can cause a lot of pain. They can keep you from sleeping. They can keep you from working effectively, and they can make you pretty cranky. And so he wrote a wonderful letter just thanking to be out of pain and to once again be the person he knew he was, but it was always being overshadowed by this nagging, really constant pain that he'd been living in for a couple of years at that point.
Yeah, that's nice. That's very nice. What do you think the reasons are that people don't take care of their teeth? Other than economic, other than not having dental care insurance, or I would say other than dental care being unaffordable, can I just put it out there? I mean, dental care is expensive and dental insurance is not widespread. Other than the expense of dental care, what are the barriers to people taking good care of their health?
So I agree that dental treatment, you know, once you have a problem, treating it can often be expensive. I truly believe that dental prevention is not expensive. Much the same way I like to liken it that an oil change, it is some money that you have to spend. And yes, it is an expense. But if you don't do that oil change, you are now looking at a huge expense because things are breaking down now. And I look at the same way for oral health, that if you get good preventive measures, teeth getting clean, maybe fluoride if you're at high risk for tooth decay, these sorts of preventive measures down the line is going to save you a lot of money.
Thank you very much for that clarification, because that is indeed true. Prevention costs a little bit, but it's a lot better than intensive care. Eating more fruits and vegetables is a little bit more expensive than eating at Burger King or McDonald's, but in the end, it's worth the investment.
Absolutely.
Sometimes I marvel at how much a toothbrush costs. I mean, they're like $4 or $5. You kind of go, well, it's just a little piece of plastic. Come on. Why does it cost so much? But then again, it is worth the investment.
It is worth the investment. And a lot of people think that you need to have some sort of electric toothbrush or a higher end product. You don't. You can do a great job with a toothbrush that you buy for, like you said, about $4 or so. Yes, we would like you to replace it a couple times a year, because once the bristles start splaying outwards, it's not really doing a good job.
How come we don't have free toothbrush distribution efforts like we do have free condom distribution efforts?
Well, again, I guess that goes to this sort of long-held belief that, you know, oral health is something that is elective.
I mean, so is the reason that you use condoms, right? That's an elective, too.
That's true. But I think that has a whole sort of different history in it that I've never really quite thought about before.
Well, I think it is, you know, the HIV and AIDS advocacy folks and STD prevention folks really are loud. I mean, they're really good at getting the funding and getting the research and getting their voices heard. And perhaps the oral health folks are more reserved.
We're the quieter side of health promotion.
So we were talking about barriers.
Yeah, barriers. For some people, they are fearful at the dentist because they've had either painful experiences themselves or have heard stories of painful experiences, which color their viewpoint. Oftentimes, it could be simply finding a provider that's culturally sensitive and fluent in your language.
What is your current research about?
Right now, I am finishing up a study with one of our master's in dental hygiene students looking at palliative oral care in a nursing home and looking at the barriers to receiving that in a nursing home.
Can you explain what you mean?
Well, since 1987, there have been federal laws in place to ensure that daily oral care is provided in nursing homes, specifically skilled nursing facilities, and that dental care and dental treatment is delivered in these facilities. And yet, it's not really happening. And because, of course, the aging of the population, the numbers of people who are entering assisted living, which are not governed under these federal laws the way a skilled nursing facility is. So the oral health found in assisted living places are typically even less ideal than in skilled nursing facilities.
Do you have any answers about what the barriers are?
Well, it is very complex. It has a lot of competing priorities going on. It's typically a certified nursing assistant who provides this care. However, the CNA also is providing all hygiene care, toileting, bathing, changing, everything. And oftentimes, oral health, again, is relegated to a lower priority with all these competing needs. If you have somebody who is not able to bathe themselves or toilet themselves, you're definitely going to be addressing that first before their oral health. We have to raise the importance of oral health. It's not a choice either or, but it's having enough person power, having enough facility oversight and feedback that this is all happening.
Well, it seems to me like you could more easily skip a shower than you could skip brushing your teeth. It just in terms of your personal hygiene, it would be more important to brush your teeth than to take a shower.
Well, for the vast majority of us, the choices we make, the instigation of taking care of our oral health is self-determined. However, when older adults become very frail and they become institutionalized, that is often now under the aegis of another person. And a lot of times these certified nursing assistants don't have the training in oral health. And in brushing the teeth of another person, it's not as easy as brushing your own teeth. Oftentimes, when people are institutionalized, it may be due to a cognitive disorder, and there can be some care-resistant behavior. And again, you need specific training to deal with that. That's often not occurring in these long-term care facilities.
Yeah, you're right. From a safety point of view, from making sure that the person doing the brushing doesn't get their fingers chopped off, or I could imagine the problems. But even so, I would imagine that brushing someone else's teeth would require less time and effort than bathing them.
Well, it is actually the most hated duty in long-term care. That the CNAs would rather toilet somebody than brush the teeth. And a lot of it is fear and a perceived lack of knowledge. Many institutions don't have oral care procedures in their training manuals. They don't have oral care cards that they're supposed to have. The residents' oral supplies are stored near a communal sink. There's lots of instances where somebody will try on somebody else's denture. They don't really realize it's not their denture. There goes infection control. Even having the supplies in a communal bathroom, that's not good infection control. And so there's a lot of things that have to be standardized in these facilities. Add to it that typically a turnover rate of certified nursing assistants can be as little as 6 months, and now you have new personnel.
Economics probably has a lot to do with it. If you're paying people more, you're going to have less turnover. If you invest in their training, that's going to cost money.
Exactly. And there's no reimbursement for oral care for older adults.
There's no reimbursement for oral care for most of us.
Well, there is dental insurance, and children have a lot of programs that do provide preventive care for them. So that's a good start.
It is a good start, and we have a long road ahead of us. Yeah. I really appreciate that you're in this field of dental public health and that you're one of the voices advocating for prioritizing oral health, because prioritizing oral health actually leads to prioritizing our well-being as individuals and as a society. So I really appreciate your work.
Well, thank you. And thank you for allowing me to get out the message that oral health does indeed matter.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to talk to you, Susan.
Thank you.
That was Professor Susan Hyde from the Division of Oral Epidemiology and Dental Public Health at UCSF. Na ding ding da te te ding ding da ta na ta ge ta ki te di ge na ga na ga ta ki te 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 ta ge na ta ge te te kre din na ki te ta ta ri ki te ta ta ri ki te ta da ta ri ki te ta de de ri ki te ta ta na ta ge ta ri ki te ti ge na ga na ga ta ki te te ta ge na ta ge te te kre din na ki te ta ta ri ki te ta ta ri ki te ta da ta ri ki te ta de ri ki te ta Nanjing Now is a completely independent, non-commercial program with a highly interdisciplinary, integrative, and international approach meant to encourage us to prioritize our health and happiness. If you find this program inspiring and worthwhile, please show your support by donating generously. And also, feel free to comment on the website or on Facebook. Share what you learn and like with your friends, families, and colleagues. And if you'd like to join the Nanjing Now team, I'm currently looking for volunteers and interns with a wide variety of skills. Please contact me through the website. I'll be delighted to hear from you. Marc-Antoine is a physics teacher, a carpenter, a musician, and a good friend of mine. He shares with us how dental care works in France from his point of view. Marc-Antoine, welcome to Nanjing Now.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Tell me, have you ever had any problems with your teeth that you needed to go to see a dentist in France?
Yes, I'm not a very lucky person. As regards as my teeth, I have to take care of them. Some people never need to go to the dentist, and I do a lot, at least once a year.
Tell me what your experience is when you go to the dentist in France.
Well, you have to be careful of whom you're going to visit. Of course, if you just pick up on the yellow pages any name, you can have very bad surprises.
The dentists that are available to you in France, are they all part of the National Health Service, or are there private dentists and National Health Service dentists?
It's up to them. Well, you would always have a minimum fee that the national assurance system would reimburse, you say, but it's up to them if they want to get paid a little more. They have to say it before, and then whatever is the charge, you will be reimbursed such amount of money. It depends on what kind of service they are offering. So it's up to you as well to choose a dentist where you will get reimbursed for all the what you've paid, or to go to a better dentist, and then you will put some money out of your pocket.
So is there some idea that the dentists that serve in the National Health Service are not as good as the dentists that are charging an extra fee?
Well, that's mostly what the majority would think, but it's not necessarily true. I know dentists who just charge the minimum and who are just very good. And of course, I know dentists who charge a lot of money and that they make mistakes, yes. But in general, better dentists ask for better money.
Is there any obstacle in France to getting care for your teeth?
For the vital things, there are no obstacles.
What would you count as vital?
Well, when you have broken teeth, when it's not only like for good looking.
It's not only for aesthetics. Yes. So if you have a problem with like an infection in your tooth, or you have a cavity, or you broke your tooth, then no problem. There is no obstacle to getting care.
Yes, I think so. I think so.
Does it matter if you're rich or poor?
No, it doesn't matter. Once again, it's up to you to find the right person, but they are available. The lists are available. If you are poor, you can cure your teeth. Having said that, I know that I have many friends who are like 50 years old, and then they have to undertake so heavy duty work, and this is very expensive. They all have to put a lot of money in it.
Why do they have to undertake this heavy work, and why is that not covered?
Well, I don't know exactly why. I believe they take care of their teeth, but well, no. Obviously not. They don't take care enough of their teeth, and so at the end, they have to just replace entire rows of teeth or something.
And this is not covered by the service?
No, it's not covered.
Because it's primarily aesthetic?
It's not aesthetic, though. It's like when I have to replace a crown, like the government will pay me back something like 200 euros. And then I have to pay for the rest. So in fact, earlier I said, you don't need to worry, it will be reimbursed. But when it gets big, you are only partially reimbursed. And then you need your private assurance.
So basically there's a cap on how much the National Health Service will pay.
Yes.
But the cap on how much the National Health Service will pay is not necessarily consistent with what the dentist is charging.
Yes.
So why aren't they limiting how much the dentist can charge?
Well, I think they assume that, I mean, you can choose a dentist with sensible prices.
So there are dentists that only charge what the National Health Service will reimburse?
For little things. For a crown, for example, dentists will systematically charge more.
The crown is important. You can't chew without the crown.
Yes, that's true.
And if you can't chew, you can't eat. And if you can't eat, you can't digest.
Yes. But like, I think you can get a cheap crown for 300 euros. And so you definitely have to give some money. Everything that is heavy duty work, you have to put some money. And so you have, of course, emergency services, which are free.
And have you ever had dental care in the United States?
Once. It was 10 years ago. In fact, I just went to the dental school. That's what happened. So it was free of charge because it was an opportunity for the students to practice on me.
And did you feel that you got good care?
Yeah, it was not a very difficult thing, but it was well done.
What was your problem, if I can ask?
I don't know the name, but a carie, we say that in France.
Cavity.
Cavity, yes.
That's good practice for them.
Yes.
Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you.
Pleasure for me too.
That was Marc-Antoine from Paris, France. Na, tin, tin, ta. Tete tin tin ta gena dare da girna gatene kine tatar kit de tete gain tara ta kata ta kit de katar kit de katar kit de tatar girna katar kit de tatar girna katar kit kena dare ta girna gatene kine tatar kit de tete gain tara ta kata ta kit de katar kit de tatar kit de tatar girna katar kit de tatar girna katar kit de.
Brush your teeth in the morning and in the night. Keep your teeth shiny white. I give you $1 to buy a new toothpaste. I love you and Paul very much. You tell Paul about me and tell him to keep his teeth shiny white.
Nanjing Now was written, edited, recorded, and produced by Dr. Jayashree Chander.
Website by Takahiro Noguchi.
Tabla and Manjira played by Jayasi. Compositions from Pandit Swapan Chowdhury. Bass guitar by Pedro Ordonez. Drum set by Jissi Garcia.
Multi-instrumentalist Dave Rosenfeld.
You can find us on the web at neijingnow.org. neijingnow.org.
Nanjing Now is an entirely listener-supported endeavor. Please donate generously if these shows are beneficial and enjoyable. Your support is essential to keep this program alive.